This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Emily Metz, President and CEO of the American Egg Board. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. Learn how Syngenta is working alongside growers and farmers to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farms at Syngenta-US.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with the Egg Board's Emily Metz next. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. At Syngenta, we talk to U.S. farmers and growers every day to hear their concerns and help them meet their challenges. From research and development to create innovative products to digital solutions to reduce water use and create healthy soil, we work hand in hand with America's men and women who feed and power the world. Our highly skilled teams are at the forefront of connecting technology with the oldest profession to utilize mobile apps, aerial imagery, and other advances to enable farmers and growers to make smart application of buying decisions for their farms. When the American farmer has a successful crop, we all benefit. And Syngenta is proud to work alongside the grower and farmer to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farm. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of the U.S. farmer online at Syngenta-US.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Few in the livestock industry have suffered more from disease outbreaks than the nation's egg producers. American Egg Board President and CEO Emily Metz says high-path avian influenza forced the euthanization of countless flocks and the loss of millions of dollars to the nation's egg producers. Metz says the industry continues to recover, and producers are working to meet consumer demand both domestically and abroad.
We have about 400 egg farms in this country. Over 90% are still family farms, which I think is a fact that we need to talk about more. But there has been consolidation. There's a lot coming at farmers right now. And so as a result of that, you have farms that are not passing on to the next generation. The kids don't want to come back to the farm. They're going off to college. They're majoring in other things. They don't want to come back and run the family egg farm. And so you have those farmers that are looking for how to keep their farm in operation, but they can't run it anymore. And so you have some of those larger farms who are merging or absorbing some of those farms that are in the area and becoming larger. And that, I think, is a conversation we need to have in a realistic way about industry consolidation. I think sometimes it gets framed as, you know, the big guys are gobbling the little guys up because the little guys can't compete, and that's not the case. The egg industry has a very strong representation from smaller farms, from niche farms. We have all different types of eggs. We always say if there's a kind of egg, we'll find a farmer to produce it, and that's certainly the truth in this industry. But we've got a lot of farmers that are simply ready to hang it up. And they want their farms to stay in operation. They want their birds to go somewhere. And so we have other farms that are stepping up and absorbing those farms and absorbing the birds and moving forward with a larger footprint. And I think we need to have a meaningful conversation about what that looks like and what that really means. Because it's not the big bad guys out against the small guys. That's certainly not what it is at all.
With broiler production, it's the integrator that owns the birds, and the farmers are paid for the pounds that they produce and obviously the work of taking care of the birds. With eggs, who owns the birds?
Our farmers own those birds. It's very different than broiler production. And, you know, even though we are all kind of one, you know, the feathers flock together, as they say, and we align with our turkey and our broiler brethren on a lot of issues. On this one, our egg farmers own those birds, and they're raising them every day. They're caring for them every day. And the eggs that are produced from them, which is about 300, we have about 300 million egg-laying hens in the U.S., which we like to say is nearly one bird for every American. And those birds are producing 90 billion eggs. And those are coming out of those farms that our farmers own those birds, and they work with them every day.
Now, that means when HPAI hit and birds had to be put down, those losses went directly to producers instead of in broilers where it would have been to the integrator.
100%. There's not an integrator in the egg industry, which I think is a common misconception. So to your point, when HPI hits a farm, it is very acute because those losses go directly to that farmer. And I think what a lot of people don't appreciate is you can't, HPA number one is a deadly virus. So I think it's important to note that those birds, unfortunately, it is fatal when that virus comes into contact with those birds. And so we have to depopulate those houses. We have to do that in a humane way. We have to humanely euthanize those birds. And then we can't just go out the next day and get more birds. We have to sanitize that house. We have to abide by the APHIS and USDA guidelines for how to safely repopulate those farms with younger birds, with pullets. And that takes about 6 months to do all that. And so not only does that farmer have that initial loss of his flock or her flock, but we also then have a lengthy bit of time where that farm isn't producing a single egg, is not selling a single egg. And that's a significant burden on that farmer.
So what's the balance between domestic and export demands for eggs and egg products?
Oh boy, we've got a heavy hill to climb there. So those folks who know me in the industry know that I'm super competitive, and eggs fall far behind our other commodity partners in the barnyard. So we hover at about 3-4% of total production that is exported. So we have a lot of work to do there. I mean, obviously we're not like pork or beef where we can export certain bits of the animal that are not highly consumed domestically. Obviously it's just one thing for us, but we need to look to foreign markets not only to manage our risk, because we quite literally right now have all of our eggs in one basket, but every egg or egg product that we can move overseas helps us with bringing value back to our producers on that farm. And so we have really committed as an industry to increasing our exports. And so we're looking to increase that 3-4% to about 7-8% of total production over the next 5 years. And we're looking to do that primarily through egg products, which represents about 30% of our production. But we're also developing a very comprehensive strategy for shell eggs abroad as well. Obviously, there are some logistical challenges there with transporting shell eggs to far-off foreign markets. Egg products are easier to transport, but we're really looking to invest in an international marketing strategy, working with our partners at U.S. Poultry and Egg Export Council to do that. And this industry is committed to increasing our exports significantly.
Emily, from the demand that was developed regarding cage-free eggs, was that following a push from retailers? Was it from consumers? Or was it animal husbandry that said though that was an area that the industry should move?
I think truthfully, it was a push from a variety of factors. I think customers, I think consumers who maybe thought they knew what they wanted or thought they wanted something that maybe they didn't want. And I think it also came from some legislation, and that legislation, unfortunately, was driven by those who probably aren't heavy users of eggs or egg products. And I think the consequences of that has been that the transition, and this transition has been bumpy, not because our farmers have been unwilling to do it. In fact, over the last decade, cage-free supply has increased by more than 400%. But why it's been bumpy, Jess, is because that supply has outpaced the true demand. So the American Egg Board is investing in some work right now to understand what the true consumer demand for cage-free eggs is. And I can tell you the spoiler alert there is that we have a lot more cage-free eggs coming on board or available than the true demand for those cage-free eggs is, even with the prohibited conventional eggs that can now no longer be sold in a variety of states across the country because of that legislation that I mentioned. And so what we really need to do is have a responsible discussion with the industry, with our customers, that's driven by this true demand to understand how we can give the farmers the guarantees for contracts, the guarantees they need to make those capital investments that are required to go forward with cage-free transitions, because it is a significant investment to turn over facilities. And we need to really help provide guidance to our farmers about what kinds of barns and what kinds of facilities they need to be building in the future. And that all needs to be driven by an understanding of true demand and can't be driven by the whims of legislation or by groups that are not consumers of our product at the end of the day.
Has cage-free affected the production efficiency, the health of the animal, or made a healthier product?
The answer to all of that is no. I mean, we tell everybody that no matter what kind of production facility, what kind of housing style an egg comes from, what kind of farm it comes from, whether that chicken is inside or outside, what kind of feed that chicken eats, at the end of the day, it all comes down to management. And so our farmers are the best animal managers. They're the best bosses for their birds in the world. And so we raise the happiest, healthiest chickens in this country on our farms, bar none. And that's number one, why our eggs are so in demand in foreign markets. We just have to move them over there. And why no matter what kind of farm that egg comes off of, it's healthy, it's wholesome, it's safe, and it comes from an animal that's well cared for. And so again, going back to my point on true demand, if a consumer really wants that bird to be outside, we have an egg for you. If that consumer really wants that bird to be fed with organic feed, we have an egg for you. If that consumer really wants that bird to not be in a cage, we have an egg for you. But there's no differences in the nutritional quality or the health and welfare of those birds between eggs or production practices.
Consumer demand has varied through the generations. So what trends are underway now that we're moving past the millennials, way past the baby boomers, that's either bringing opportunity or challenge to the industry? And how do you keep up?
Oh, my gosh. So I think in the last 4 years, with, I know everyone's tired of hearing about the pandemic, but with COVID, with all of the kind of geopolitical challenges we're encountering right now, with the environment we operate in, this consumer is changing faster than ever before. I mean, you look at the number of people now who are using their mobile phone to order groceries, to, you know, scan a QR code on a menu. Those trends are here to stay. And so we have to move even faster to meet consumers where they are. I would say one of our biggest challenges, Jeff, is we've got a younger consumer who quite simply does not want to cook. And so that presents a real challenge for us. We've got a challenge of breaking eggs out of the breakfast day part. You know, I spend a lot of time last year over in Asia, which is one of our target markets. And you look at countries like Japan or Korea, eggs are eaten all day long. They're not just for breakfast. But here in the U.S. in the domestic market, even when we cook eggs at nighttime, we say, oh, well, I had breakfast for dinner. And so we've got to take that challenge head on. But even more than that, we've got to take on the challenge of we're going to have a consumer and a generation of consumers coming up right now who don't want to bring out a skillet and cook eggs. They want to have something that's ready to go, that's ready to prepare, that's heat and eat, that's convenient, that they can grab and run with and kind of engage in all these different things. And so we need to make eggs more accessible and convenient and presented in formats where they can be grab and go. And so that's a big challenge for us, is introducing this new generation to eggs and making sure that we preserve the high demand we see domestically. Right now we're in 95% of refrigerators. We've got to make sure we stay there. And for those people who do love eggs, because so many people absolutely love eggs, we've got to get them to use and churn through that carton more frequently. We just did a study last year. We went into people's houses, and they said that the egg carton is almost invisible to them. They're not clocking it when they got to open that carton to grab out two eggs to make chocolate chip cookies, or an egg here or there to make a, you know, bread a chicken cutlet or make a meatloaf with, or so many of those things where eggs are the ingredient and not the star. And we need to remind them that eggs are intertwined in so many of their favorite recipes and get them going through that egg carton more frequently so that we're stocking up more often and moving through eggs more quickly at retail consumption.
So I know you're doing research and looking ahead at some of these elements, but my question is, how do you convince the consumer to use eggs not just for breakfast, but in entrees and in snacks and in other elements of their diet?
Well, I think, like I said, number one is reminding them that eggs don't always have to be the star of the show. I mean, of course, they're the star of the show for me, but they're the ingredient and the facilitator in so many things. And so a lot of what we're doing now with our marketing, which relies heavily on influencers, we're putting eggs into new recipes and into new ideas where the egg is the ingredient. So maybe it's the frother in a beverage. Maybe it's, the binder in, like I said, a meatloaf or some sort of, you know, item like that, that we've got to use eggs for the capabilities of the egg. We kind of like to say it's the Swiss Army knife of cooking. The egg does a lot. But beyond that, we're really focused on innovation. So our industry has invested almost $4 million last year, another 4 to 5 this year in long-term demand-building innovation. And what I mean by innovation is I'm talking about investing in devices, in new production technologies, in new product formulations with manufacturers of major, major, major food products, looking at how we can use eggs differently. We filed our first patent last year on a device for this industry that would revolutionize how the food service industry is able to prepare eggs. So those are the types of things long term that we're looking at to really build and grow demand, not just to sustain it, but to grow it.
FDA's Robert Califf recently said he had two goals for the year ahead. One of those was front of package labels, and the second was defining what is healthy. How do his goals affect your industry?
Well, we hope he's successful, let's say that, because healthy is top of our mind. We are patiently waiting, and maybe not so patiently waiting, for the FDA rule for the definition of healthy to become a final rule, because under the proposed rule, eggs are included and qualify officially as a healthy food, which means that we can then put on package those claims about eggs being healthy. We've known that forever. We've known that eggs are one of the healthiest, most perfect foods you can buy. But having the FDA allow us to say that on our packaging and have eggs be included in the definition of what is healthy is huge. That's massive for us. So we're hoping that he is successful in driving that forward, that final rule gets published. We've heard a rumor it might be April, but we're hoping that the federal government stays on time with a deadline and that we can continue to put forward our efforts to promote the fact that eggs are healthy, that they're one of the most perfect foods, and you better believe that we're going to have a heck of a celebration when that rule becomes final and we can say that on our package, and we're already working with major packaging manufacturers to be able to do that.
Have there been studies with replicated science that might have changed the opinion or the stigma associated with cholesterol and eggs?
There have been a lot of studies. So it's when I first joined American Egg Board, you know, I was told by a lot of our folks in the industry, well, cholesterol is no longer an issue. And AEB has really worked to be driven by the data, the consumer data we have. And we did a study about 3 years ago that said that a significant number of consumers still thought that cholesterol was a problem, and they listed that fear of cholesterol as the reason they weren't eating more eggs. And so we have worked very hard and are continuing to work with health professionals, doctors, nutritionists, retail dietitians, to help them understand that the science has changed. Even the American Heart Association advises that healthy adults can now include eggs as part of a heart-healthy diet. And so the science, that kind of fear of cholesterol that was happening in the 80s and the early 90s, that is old science. That science has been disproven. Eggs have been declared again and again as part of a heart-healthy diet. And so we need to make sure that that message is getting out. But it takes time. As you know, I don't listen to things the first time I hear them. My mom would say I don't listen to them the seventh or eighth time I hear them. But I think we gotta continue to drive that message home with consumers that eggs are part of a heart healthy diet, period.
Some would like to include sustainability into the recommendations that will come from the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. What's the pro and con of that? And if it were to make its way into their decision, what story does the egg producer have to tell?
I don't think that's necessarily new, right? I think this marriage of sustainability and nutrition has been around for a bit now. I think a lot of folks in the community, in the sustainability community, or in the nutrition community have been talking about this notion of sustainable nutrition. So I think it's coming. I think eggs stand to benefit from those associations. I know that's how we're looking at it at the American Egg Board, is we're already looking at, okay, per unit of protein, what's our impact? And that impact is very low. So not only is an egg one of the most perfect foods nutritionally, but it's also one of the most sustainable. And so I think marrying those two is a benefit to a lot of agricultural commodities, but especially eggs, where climate-friendly protein. And I think we need to be having a discussion and looking at factors of sustainability. This year, we're going to create a tool that helps our producers measure their individual on-farm impact and be able to track their continuous improvement over time. That'll be launched in November. That's something our farmers have asked us to do for them because they want to be able to get into the minute details of their footprint and their impact. And so I think, again, us, like eggs, like many agricultural industries, are continuing to advance on sustainable science, and putting that with nutrition, I think, is important. It's an important story to tell, and it's in line with a lot of the global goals around social responsibility and a lot of what our customers are asking us for. So I think it's the natural evolution, and it's here to stay, and we need to be prepared to answer those questions both for customers and consumers.
Being a national checkoff approved by Congress, I know that you have the responsibility of evaluating the return on investment. So what is the return on investment of the checkoff program to your producers?
Well, it's significant. So you are correct. We have the responsibility every 5 years to do a return on investment study. And our most recent return on investment study showed a 10-to-1 return on investment. So what that means is for every dollar that our farmers put into the checkoff, we're returning 10 to them in terms of value back to their farm. You know, I think there's been some chatter about the benefit of checkoff programs. I think what people don't understand is that our farmers came together to ask Congress in 1976 to form an organization to market on their behalf. It's not a tax. Well, it is, I guess technically you could say it's a tax, but it's a tax that they're willing to pay because they believe in the importance of, they need to do their job, which is to raise birds, the happiest, healthiest birds they can raise, and produce the most perfect protein on the planet, which is the incredible egg. And they are asking us to do a job of marketing and communicating about that product to customers and consumers, both here in the U.S. and around the world. And so they value what the checkoff does. That doesn't mean we can sit back on our laurels. It means we have to keep pushing. We've got an aggressive agenda and are always want to do better on that return on investment. But checkoffs benefit farmers, period. And I think that's a message that perhaps does not get shared enough, that our farmers came together and asked for this. They asked Congress to set a tax that they would pay, which is pretty unheard of. I don't know that I would ask for a tax voluntarily to pay into on my own, but that's what our farmers did. That's what a lot of farmers have done in other commodities, and they feel that there's a benefit to the checkoff. And for us, that value right now is 10-to-1, but I'm hoping to beat that on the next round.
Emily, we have made it past Christmas, and we are working closer and closer to spring, and then there will be Easter. How important is Easter to the egg industry and even that big egg roll that happens on the White House lawn?
Jeff, Easter is our Super Bowl. It's the big one. You cannot have Easter without eggs. Everybody knows that. They are integral to the springtime holidays. We don't want to forget about Passover either. Certainly a lot of egg-centric holidays in the spring, but Easter's the biggie. And we will be back this year with the White House on the front lawn welcoming guests to the White House Easter egg roll. We'll be presenting the First Lady with a commemorative egg, as the American Egg Board has done for more than 45 years now. Presented the sitting First Lady with a commemorative egg made from a real egg and designed by an egg artist. And we'll be doing a lot of fun stuff on the lawn this year. And I think It's phenomenal. Last year, President Biden thanked America's egg farmers for their help in hosting the White House Easter egg roll. That was a big, big moment for us. We certainly love the event. It's very near and dear to our farmers' hearts. It's a big tradition for us. But this year, we're actually excited to announce we're going to be helping people have their own Easter egg roll at home. I think for those that live in the Beltway area, the Easter egg roll is kind of the golden ticket to be able to get and to go. We know there's thousands of people that enter the lottery every year, but for those who live outside the Beltway, how can they have that experience and have their own egg roll at home? And so we're going to be coming out with some helpful tools and goods and services to help people have their own very own Easter egg roll at home if you're not in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. So we're excited about that.
Well, Emily Metz, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. We also want to congratulate you on the Farm Foundation Emerging Leader Award. Congratulations. Thanks for being with us on this episode of Open Mic. And today, as is tradition, the microphone is yours.
Thanks so much. I was humbled by that award, and I'm humbled to serve the egg industry and work on behalf of our farmers. Thanks so much for having me, and would love to be back anytime.
Our thanks to Emily Metz, President and CEO of the American Egg Board, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. Syngenta is working alongside growers and farmers to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farm. Learn more at syngenta-us.com. For AgriPulse Open Mic, I'm Jeff Nally.